Mathura, I see. This is from Madhyalila, chapter 17. Pate yaha yaha hoy jamuna darshan taha jampa dia pare prema achetan. While the Lord was going to Mathura, he came across the river Yamuna several times, and as soon as he saw the river Yamuna, he would immediately jump in, falling unconscious in the water, in the ecstasy of love of Krishna. Mathura nikate aila, Mathura dekhiya, dandavat hawa pare, prema vishtaha. When he approached Mathura and saw the city, he immediately fell to the ground and offered obeisances with great ecstatic love. Mathura asya koila, vishranti tirtisnan, janmastani keshav dekhi, korila praman. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu entered the city of Mathura, he took his bath at Vishram Ghat. He then visited the birthplace of Krishna and saw the deity named Keshavji. He offered his respectful obeisances to this deity. Premanandina Chigai Sangana Hunkar Prabhu Prema Vishadiki Loki Chamatkar. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu chanted, danced, and made loud vibrations, all the people were astonished to see his ecstatic love. Eka vipra pari prabhur charana doriya prabhu shangin ritya kari prema vishti hava. One brahmana fell at the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and then began to dance with him in ecstatic love. Duhe premin ritya kari kariko lakuli Hare Krishna kahanduhe boli bahu tuli. Both of them danced in ecstatic love and embraced one another. Raising their arms, they said, chant the holy names of Hari and Krishna. Loka Hari Hari boli kolahala haila Keshav sevak prabuke mala paraila. All the people then began to chant Hari Hari, and there was a great uproar. The priest in Lord Keshava's service offered Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu a garland. Loke kahi prabhu deki hawa vishmoya aichihena prema lokik kabu noya. When the people saw Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's dancing and chanting, they were struck with wonder, and they all said, such transcendental love is never an ordinary thing. Yahar darshane loke premi mata hawa Hashe kande nache gai Krishna namalawa. The people said, simply by seeing Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, everyone is maddened with love of Krishna. Indeed, everyone is laughing, crying, dancing, chanting, and taking the holy name of Krishna. Sarvata nishchita iho Krishna avatar Mathura aila loker korite nishchar. Certainly Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is in all respects the incarnation of Krishna. Now he has come to Mathura to deliver everyone. Tabe Mahaprabhu se brahmane lava tahare puchila kichu nibrite vasya. After this, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took aside the brahmana. Sitting in a solitary place, the Lord began to question him. Arya sharal tumi vrida brahman kaha hoite paili tumi e premadan. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, you are an elderly Brahmin, you are sincere, and you are advanced in spiritual life. Where from have you gotten this transcendental opulence of ecstatic love for Krishna? Viprakohi Shripad Sri Madhavendra Puri Brahmite Brahmite Aila Mathura Nagari. The Brahmin replied, His Holiness Srila Madhavendra Puri came to the city of Mathura while he was on tour. Kripa Korite Homora Nilaye Aila Mori Shishya Korimora Hati Bika Kaila. While at Mathura, Sripad Madhavendra Puri visited my house and accepted me as a disciple. He even took lunch at my home. Gopal Prakatakari Seva Koile Mahashoy Adya Piha Tahar Seva Govardhani Hoy. After installing the deity Gopal, Sri Madhavendra Puri rendered him service. That very deity is still being worshipped at Govardhan Hill. Suni Prabhu Koilatara Charana Vandan Bhaipaya Prabhupai Parila Brahman. As soon as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard about Madhavendra Puri's relationship with the Brahman, he immediately offered obeisances at his feet. Becoming fearful, the Brahmana also fell at the Lord's feet. Prabhu Kohi Tumi Guru Ami Shishya Prai Guru Hai Shishye Namaskar Na Juyai. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "You are on the platform of my spiritual master, and I am your disciple. Since you are my spiritual master, it is not befitting for you to offer me obeisances." Suniya Vishmita Vipra Kohi Boi Pawa Aichivat Kahakene Sanyasi Hawa. Upon hearing this, the Brahmana became afraid. He then said, "Why do you speak like this? You are a sannyasi." Kintu Tomar Prema Deki Mani Anumani Madhavendra Purir Sambandadara Jani. Upon seeing your ecstatic love, I can just imagine that you must have some relationship with Madhavendra Puri. This is my understanding. Krishna Prema Taha Yahan Taha Sambandha Taha Vina E Prema Kaha Nahi Ganda. This kind of ecstatic love can be experienced only when one has a relationship with Madhavendra Puri. Without him, even a scent of such transcendental ecstatic love is impossible. Tabi bata charjatari sambandha kahila suni anandita vipra nachite lagila. Balabhadra Bhattacharya then explained the relationship between Madhavendra Puri and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. After hearing this, the Brahmana became very pleased and began to dance. Tabi vipra prabhure lava aila nijagari apana ichai prabhur nana seva kari. The Brahmana then took Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to his home and out of his own free will began to serve the Lord in various ways. Bika lagi bhattacharya korai larandan tabi mahaprabhu hashi bolila vachan. He asked Balabhadra Bhattacharya to cook Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's lunch. At that time, the Lord, smiling, spoke as follows. Puri gosai toma gari karayachan bika mori tumi bika deha e morashika. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then said, "Madhavendra Puri has already taken lunch at your place. Therefore, you may cook and give me the food. That is my instruction." Yad yad acharati shrestas tad tad evitaro janaha sayat pramanam kurute lokas tad anuvartate. This is from Bhagavad Gita. Whatever action is performed by a great man, common men follow, and whatever standards he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. Yad yapi sanadiya hoy seita brahman sanadiya gori sanyasina kori bojan. The Brahman belonged to the Sanadiya Brahman community, and a sannyasi does not accept food from such a Brahmana, because probably there's a technical purport here, but he explains that these kind of Brahmanas were often engaged in different kinds of business, and therefore they're not considered a very high class or very pure kind of Brahmanas. Tatapi puri deki tara vaishnavachar shishya kari tara bhikka koila angikar. Although the Brahman belonged to the Sanadiya community, Srila Madhavendra Puri saw that he behaved like a Vaishnava and therefore accepted him as his disciple. The food he cooked was also accepted by Madhavendra Puri. Mahaprabhu tari jadi bhikka magila dainya kari se vipra kohita lagila. Therefore Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu willingly requested food from the Brahmana, and the Brahmana, feeling a natural humility, began to speak as follows. Tomare bika dibo bhara bhagya se amar tumi ishwar nahi tomar vidi vyavahar. It is a great fortune for me to offer you food. You are the Supreme Lord, and being in a transcendental position, you are not restricted in any way. Murka loka koribeka tomar nindan sahitina parimuse dushtera vachan. Foolish people will blaspheme you, but I shall not tolerate the words of such foolish people. Purport Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur remarks that although the Brahmin did not belong to the superior community, he fearlessly chastised so-called caste Brahmanas because he was situated on the platform of pure devotional service. There are people who are opposed to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's accepting a Vaishnava belonging to a lower caste. Such people do not consider Mahaprasad transcendental, and therefore they are described here as murka, foolish, and dushta, mischievous. A pure devotee has the power to challenge such high caste people, and his brave statements are not to be considered proud or puffed up. On the contrary, he's to be considered straightforward. Such a person does not like to flatter high class Brahmanas who belong to the non-Vaishnava community. So, a pure devotee, an advanced devotee who is situated on the platform of steady, pure devotional service, his vision becomes very clear. He can see things as they are. He's not in illusion, but he can see into the hearts of others, and he can see their illusion. And of course, there are many kinds of illusion in the material world. The basic illusion is thinking that we are this body. The performance of the four principal kinds of sinful activity are the sources of so many other kinds of misunderstanding and so many other varieties of sinful actions. So, if one can cure the tendency to perform these four basic sinful activities, then he can greatly purify his existence. And if one follows the process of Krishna consciousness, then he can become situated on the platform of real knowledge, and his illusion, it will go away, just like clouds covering the sun. They can be just blown away, and when they are gone, the sunlight is very clear. So one who is a pure devotee, then he is able to correct the behavior of anyone, even if a person is in a so-called very high position. Just like Jara Bharat, he appeared externally to be a very backward person, so much so that his brothers, they used to leave him in the field at night to watch over the animals. And when King Rahuvana was traveling in that direction, he needed a palanquin bearer. So he saw Jara Bharat and he thought, this is a, you know, animalistic type of person, low class of person. You know, he's good for this kind of work, palanquin bearer. So he ordered him that you carry my palanquin. So Jara Bharat, anyway, he took it as the arrangement of the Lord. He was bearing the palanquin. But then, you know, he was not very concerned about the king's comfort. He was just walking along as he pleased. So there was a sort of bumping effect, and King Rahugana got very agitated, and he began to, you know, chastise in very cruel words Jara Bharat. So Jara Bharat just, you know, stopped, and he turned around and he started to, you know, preach straight to the king that, you know, you're completely in Maya. You think you're a great king, but actually you're just a fool. You're not this body. You should get off this platform of illusion. Just like that, very strong words he was speaking. And it was so powerful that, you know, the king was completely convinced. You know, it just stopped him in his tracks, and he had to reconsider that my behavior is not proper. I think I'm a great person. It's a fact. I'm not a very significant person. So he was truly humbled by the potent preaching of Jara Bharat. And in this way, he changed, and he became a devotee, and he accepted Jara Bharat as spiritual master. And there are many examples of great devotees. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur himself, he was very fearless in his preaching. He was very sharp with the caste Brahmanas.
and very quick to expose their flaws and bodily attachment. And there's a famous instance when they were actually very fearful of him. But he went to one very big gathering of pandits and brahmanas and sadhus. So they didn't want him to speak. They kept sort of putting him off. But, you know, finally, you know, he said, okay, you don't want me to speak, I'm leaving. So then they agreed, all right, speak. So when he started to speak, then he began by glorifying the brahmanas, you know, verses from the Shastra. So they became, you know, pacified, and they became a little puffed up too. But then after that, he started to expose all the flaws in the consciousness of caste brahmanas. And in this way, he very powerfully defeated them. There was also one instance, I think, he was invited by one Maharaj, one king. And the king, you know, just didn't invite him to speak, but, you know, just kept offering, you know, to feed him nicely. And he wouldn't eat anything. Just kept refusing. And eventually the king hadn't asked him to speak. He just left. He just, you know, walked himself to the railway station. And, you know, I think that king came running after, trying to convince him to come back. He said, at least take some food, Swamiji. And he said, what is the use of eating in a house of a materialistic person? So he was very uncompromising in his principles. And he didn't like to go anywhere. Preaching was not involved. It's a fact for a devotee, he doesn't go to people's houses just to eat. He goes there to preach. Of course, he may take some foodstuff if it's been prepared in the proper way and if it's offered to Krishna in the proper way. But generally, sannyasis, they don't have much interest to go to the houses of householders, you know, who are entangled in various materialistic dealings. They only go there for the purpose of giving Krishna consciousness. So like that, it said that Sukadeva Goswami, he only stayed at the door of a householder long enough for the cow to be milked. He didn't hang around. But while he was waiting, he would give them some transcendental instruction. So this Brahmana, he was a very elevated person to receive so much respect from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And actually, anybody who was connected with Madhavendra Puri, he received the greatest respect from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Ishwara Puri, of course, but also Advaita Acharya, Nityananda, they were also disciples of Madhavendra Puri. And when he was in Maharashtra, he also met one Sri Ranga Puri, who he offered the utmost respect to. And even Ramchandra Puri, who, as you know, was a very critical person, he used to feed sannyasis and then criticize them for eating too much. And he criticized Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when he saw ants on the floor near his room. He said, this sannyasi is eating too much sugar. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he reduced his eating by half, and all the devotees were very unhappy because they liked to offer nice preparation to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And they kept complaining about Ramchandra Puri, and eventually Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he chastised the devotees. What are you complaining for? He's speaking correctly. The sannyasi shouldn't eat lots of sugar and too many fancy preparations like that. So in this way, he respected Ramchandra Puri because he was the godbrother of his spiritual master and because he was the disciple of Madhavendra Puri. Even though Ramchandra Puri was example of a bad disciple, Ishwara Puri was example of an ideal disciple, because he always served his spiritual master. Even when his spiritual master was very invalid, he would personally cleanse his body, clean everything very nicely. But on the other hand, Ramchandra Puri, when Madhavendra Puri was experiencing separation from Krishna, he was quoting some verses from the Shastra, and he was saying, oh my Lord of Mathura, I could not see you. Like that, he was expressing separation. So Ramchandra Puri is saying, why are you uselessly crying? you know, you've been chanting all your life and you cannot see Krishna. You know, why are you crying like this? So then Madhavendra Puri chastised and he said, get out from here, you sinful rascal. So he was a very bad disciple. A very improper behavior. But still, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed respect just because of that connection. Prabhu kohi shruti smriti yata rishi gan sabi ekamata nahi bina bina dharma. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied, the Vedas, Puranas, and great learned sages are not always in agreement with one another. Consequently, there are different religious principles. Purport, unless one comes to the absolute truth, there's no possibility of agreement. It is said that a great learned scholar, a sage, cannot be exalted unless he disagrees. On the material platform, there's no possibility of agreement. Therefore, there are different kinds of religious systems. However, the absolute truth is one. And when one is situated in the absolute truth, there is no disagreement. On that absolute platform, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is worshipable. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Bhaktyamava Bijananti Yavanyas Chasmi Tatvataha. On the absolute platform, the worshipful deity is one. And the process of worship is also one. That process is bhakti. There are many different religions throughout the world because they are not all on the absolute platform of devotional service. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Sarva Dharman Parityajya Mam Ekam Sharanam Braja. The word Ekam means one, Krishna. On this platform, there are no different religious systems. According to Srimad Bhagavatam, Dharma Projita Koitavatra. On the material platform, religious systems are different. Srimad Bhagavatam describes them from the very beginning as Dharma Koitava, cheating religions. None of these religions are actually genuine. The real genuine religious system is that which enables one to become a lover of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the words of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Savai Pumsham Paro Dharmo Yato Bhakti Radhuksaje Ahituki Apratihata Ayatma Supersiditi. The supreme occupation Dharma for all humanity is that by which men can attain to loving devotional service unto the transcendent Lord. Such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted in order to completely satisfy the self. On this platform there is nothing but the service of the Lord. When a person has no ulterior motive, there is certainly oneness and agreement of principles. Since everyone has a different body and mind, different types of religions are needed. But when one is situated on the spiritual platform, there are no bodily and mental differences. Consequently, on the absolute platform, there is oneness in religion. And the next verse, Dharma stapana hetu sadur vyavahar puri gosayar jay arat acharan sei dharma shar. A devotee's behavior establishes the true purpose of religious scriptures. The behavior of Madhavendra Puri Goswami is the essence of such religious principles. This is a very significant. Actually, there's a very long purport, 5.5 pages purport, probably written on this verse. We can read perhaps tomorrow. But it is a fact that there are so many different angles of vision which are expressed in the Vedas and Puranas and expressed by different sages. Exactly how to apply these religious principles in our life in the present day. So we have to learn from the bona fide acharyas. And in our sampradaya we can see that certain very powerful acharyas who have established the most important aspects of our philosophy and way of life. So Madhavendra Puri is certainly one of the most significant persons because prior to that there was just worship of Krishna alone in our sampradaya, but from the time of Madhavendra Puri there was worship of Radharani. There was the mood of the service to Krishna in the mood of the gopis that became manifested from the time of Madhavendra Puri onwards. And of course Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was also very much exhibiting that mood of the gopis, mood of Radharani in worship of Krishna. So this lends a very ecstatic flavor in the process of bhakti yoga. Otherwise, the worship in the Tattvavadi Sampradaya or the Madhvacharya Sampradaya, it has a somewhat a drier flavor. It's also worship of Krishna, but there's not the same sweetness as we find in the mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, mood of Madhavendra Puri, and of course this was passed on right through our Sampradaya. Goswamis, of course, are also very important acharyas, and they were given very specific instructions by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and those same instructions, in a sense, they're valid and they've been followed by the subsequent acharyas, because the instruction given to Sanatana Goswami, Rupa Goswami, was to develop Vrindavan, excavate the holy places, establish temples there in the holy dam, and also to write books about the devotional service and the behavior of a devotee. So we can see that subsequently other acharyas, they have also performed the same activities, writing books and establishing temples, and especially establishing temples in Vrindavan. So also another very important acharya is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the we can say style of Vaishnavism that is followed in ISKCON today is very much sculptured by him, because for a long period there was not acceptance of sannyas and not much stress on the different ashrams. But he saw that this was creating a kind of confusion in the Vaishnav community. You know, everyone was putting on a Babaji dress and posing as a highly advanced when not actually being on that platform. And this was creating some disrepute for Vaishnavism. So therefore, you know, he stressed that we have to have these divisions within the community of Vaishnavas also. Because the Vaishnavas are, you know, in one sense, they're transcendental to these varnas and ashramas. So that was the principle behind that, you know, just putting on Babaji dress, not even wearing a Brahmin thread. And many Vaishnavas prior to that, they wouldn't wear a Brahmin thread. They didn't want to identify as belonging to any varna or ashram, that the Vaishnava should be transcendental. So this is fine for the most elevated personalities. But in Kali Yuga, people are not so elevated. They need purification. So that's why he stressed the need to go through different ashramas. Have Brahmachari ashram, Grihastha ashram, Vanaprastha ashram, Sannyas ashram. And also to initiate Brahmanas, even if they come from non-Brahman families, but stress on the fact that they must be qualified, but that we have to have a class of Brahmanas, qualified Brahmanas, in order to teach others and instruct others. So he was very fearless in the face of all kinds of criticism and opposition. And he got a lot of opposition, really strong opposition. When he went to Vrindavan to do the Rajamandru Parikrama, there was like a whole boycott by the caste Brahmana community. They forced the shopkeepers to close all their shops so the pilgrims on the Parikrama couldn't purchase any foodstuffs. They even threw stones at the Parikrama party. So like that, he had to face many challenges when he was in Puri also. He was challenging this Radharaman Das Babaji, I think his name was, Radhacharan Das Babaji, something like that. But he was a propagator of this Nittai Gaurade Sham Hare Krishna Hare Ram chanting, you know, which was becoming quite popular. So there were many fiery, you know, debates with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and this person, and there was a big division in the Puri community over this. He was very strong to establish the proper Siddhanta, and also he was very innovative in his structuring of the Vaishnav community, in his structuring of the Gaudiya Math. This is the first time that there was an organized movement to preach Krishna consciousness. He was also very innovative in publishing and printing books. Previously there wasn't such stress. Of course, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was very keen on printing books, but nobody envisioned the printing of books on such a grand scale as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and he actually purchased a printing press, which he kept in his main temple in Calcutta. He was also using modern technology. He was the first sannyasi to ride in a motor car and to travel on such a wide scale. If you read his biography, you can see that he was constantly traveling all over India from one end to the other. It was a very grueling schedule, actually, because in those days they had to travel by train. So he's one of the most significant acharyas, and he has had a tremendous effect in shaping the kind of lifestyle which we follow in ISKCON. And of course that's been further refined by Srila Prabhupada, because he actually came to the West and saw the nature of the people and was able to find the way to establish temples of Krishna consciousness where people could actually come and change their lives and become devotees of Krishna. So these are some of the most significant acharyas in our sampradaya. And Madhavendra Puri, one of the most important. So, any questions or comments? Yeah. There is a section in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that deals with that. When Lord Chaitanya went to Udupi, he met the Tattvavadis, and he was questioning them as to what was the goal of life and how to attain it. So they, of course, recognized the goal of life is to serve Krishna, but they said that the way to attain it is by following the Varnashram Dharma. But just Varnashram Dharma in itself is not sufficient. So they're too much attached to that, those particular kinds of rules and regulations. And also, some adherence to that kind of idea that you have to be born in a Brahmin family, otherwise you can't become a real Brahmana. But, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did acknowledge that they believe in Krishna, they worship Krishna, therefore this is a very great, good quality in them. But other than that, there's no very developed understanding of the different kinds of rasas, and which we find, since the time of Madhavendra Puri. It's like, say, Nectar of Devotion is a very important book with a very deep analysis of the different varieties of rasas which exist between Krishna and his devotees. So therefore, one can get a very high understanding of the different mellows of love of Godhead. That's also there especially in the talks between Lord Chaitanya and Ramananda Roy. Those are very significant discussion, because a very, very high aspect of bhakti being discussed there. So you don't find that in the Tattvavadis' writings or in their behavior. Yeah, it's similar, similarity is there, so far. Because the Sri Sampradaya, of course, that, I mean, their worship is even more in awe and reverence because they're worshipping Vishnu or Narayan. But that is a bit that same kind of mood, although it's a bit more intimate because they do worship a child form of Krishna. Udupi Sri Krishna is holding a churning rod in his hand. And he's a small boy with a churning rod, butter churning rod. So, and it's a kind of it's worship of Krishna, but still it's not those higher mellows there that we find later. Any other question? No?
Some previous day ISKCON, there's quite a lot of different spiritual masters, and they seem to put different emphasis on different aspects of the preaching mission, so to speak. So sometimes it appears that, just due to human nature, we all seem to think that this one's most important and that one's most important. And sometimes that may cause a little conflict between people trying to do something but not realizing that actually. We have to be careful about how we do these things so that we don't create conflict. So how can we avoid that, situation where obviously everybody's got a mission to fulfill, please your Prabhupada, but that we don't do it at the expense of another, or understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
People might be thinking, oh, book distribution, we just did book distribution, we forget everything else, and so people might be thinking, oh, the actress will just do that at the expense of how we I don't mean that purple, any kind of, those two that came to mind was, Prana, Ram, or this or that. How can we do it all without upsetting the advocates?
I think we just have to be a bit tolerant and a bit patient. I think there's room for everybody in ISKCON. And they're all different aspects of Prabhupada's instructions, after all. So we would like to see all those things happen. But we have to understand that, it may not be possible to have them all happen, just like that immediately. But at the same time, unless, somebody gives a bit of push, they're not likely to happen at all. So there's bound to be a bit of pushing and pulling like that. And those who are in the managerial positions in each in each country, each city, they're going to have to learn to live it, and deal with this kind of a, multi-guru, multi-disciple, situation. But they also have to, see how to keep the balance and, keep the whole show on the right course. And then they can, draw on all the different forces. Someone who's a good manager, then he'll be able to see how to, prioritize and how to structure everything so that we get, maximum effect in our preaching. That's the art of management, I guess. Yeah. They have to, everyone has to. Well, they have to accept the authority of their local leaders. And things have to be worked out in a mature way. If the devotee is able to communicate with one another and talk things out and try to, see what the priorities are, and just be a little tolerant also, then everything can be accomplished. But at the same time, you know, it's understandable if devotees have, you know, different devotees. Well, for one thing, different devotees have different kinds of varnas, and naturally, you know, they're going to see as important for them to work according to their particular nature. I mean, a person is more or less forced to act according to his nature. Of course, that has to be dovetailed in Krishna consciousness. Again, you know, those who are managing that have to try to see how to engage a devotee according to his propensity. Because if a devotee, you know, if he's inspired to work in a way that he has a natural aptitude for, then he can really accomplish a lot. You know, he can do amazing things. Even if we're not able to give that person a lot of, say, resources or manpower, if he's a, you know, if he's an inspired devotee, well, he may be able to, you know, accomplish wonderful things, even starting from very little. Well, I would say that it's not changed in the sense that there's some different priority, or that activity isn't, you know. Well, after all, Sankirtan, that is the, you know, most important activity of this movement. This is a preaching movement, and you know, that should be our special thrust, to preach the glories of the holy name, to distribute books, and to give Krishna consciousness to others. Now, when a devotee comes in the beginning, that's the best training for him. He should be ready to do, you know, just whatever he's told, and you know, he should continue like that. But later on, as he becomes more mature, then he will be given more responsibility, and you know, naturally he'd be, if he's a serious devotee, he'd be able to express his opinion, his, you know, his understanding of how to preach, and you know, there should be, obviously the leaders have to accommodate devotees, you know, who are maturing and who, you know, have already served very nicely for many years, and you know, are coming up and want to maybe express their you know, individual, or use their particular individual propensities and talents. So in the beginning, everyone should go through that same training, very humble, very menial service, work very hard in whatever they're asked to do. But as they mature a little bit, then, you know, they may get good ideas, so we have to take those ideas into consideration. I know Prabhupada, you know, with the older devotees, this, what, you know, what should we do? Or, you know, if you came up with some idea, Prabhupada would encourage it like that. I mean, I had the experience myself several times in, you know, getting some inspiration to go to another country to open up Krishna consciousness, and the people that were my authorities weren't particularly in agreement with it. But when I asked Prabhupada about it, he said, yeah, he said, this is good, you should do this, like that. So, I mean, you know, we have to, you know, art of management is to train the young devotees to be, you know, very submissive. This is very good. But as they grow older, to, you know, allow them little room to develop their individual propensities, and, you know, that way the movement can, you know, can be expanded very widely, because after all, what can one person do? I mean, it's only by the grace of having many, many good people that can work with you and help you that you can, you know, really expand things very nicely. So that's a art of good management, to be able to keep devotees who are growing older and mature, and somehow keep them inspired and engaged in Krishna consciousness, giving them some area of responsibility where they can feel fulfilled in their life, that they're really doing something, you know, for Krishna, that they're taking some responsibility themselves. Because obviously, as a person gets older, he needs to take on some responsibility himself for others. So, the essence hasn't changed, but at the same time, you know, our movements. Well, you can say that there's a changing aspect of our movement, in that there are more and more devotees, more and more older devotees. There are a lot more grihasthas than there were before. I was just mentioning to Kalsavara one a thing that Prabhupada had told a grihastha in England, to be spiritually dependent and materially independent. In other words, he had to, you know, as a grihastha, he had to be responsible to provide for his family. But at the same time, you know, he had to remain spiritually strong, spiritually dependent on the devotees and the association of devotees. Of course, there are going to be different kinds of grihasthas. Some who are more brahminical, they're going to remain closer within the society, and they'll be very cooperative and very much at the call of the management. Whereas there may be some who are more like vaishyas, who need a certain more degree of independence in order to develop sources of income. But they must maintain that very close relationship with those who are managing, so there's a good, you know, understanding, and they can assist the movement by their contributions. So in that way, we have to try to learn to accommodate all kinds of persons within this Krishna consciousness movement. If the spiritual activities are strong and steady in any yatra, that will be attractive for everyone. That will bring the devotees together. And, you know, automatically, these other things will work out. Prabhupada said, management will be at your fingertips, you know, if you maintain good spiritual standards. Automatically, everything can work itself out by the grace of Krishna. Any comment on this point? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. As I would like to. I get quite tired, and then I sort of compare myself with other devotees and feel pretty weak.
Well, I mean, as the body gets older, obviously it's harder to do physical activity in the same way as a young person. I don't exactly know your situation, you know, whether you're, you know, really doing as much as you could be doing, or so, you know, I can't exactly comment, but I mean, it's understandable if an older person can't you know, run around like a young lad. So, I mean, there has to be some allowance for that within our society, especially as devotees get older and older. We also have to give some shelter and protection to those who are older. And I can recall when I was in Bombay, there was a man from Gujarat who was always writing to us, and he was 96 years old, and you know, he wanted to come and join the temple, and he wanted to donate his savings, all his savings. I can't remember, some 10, 15, 20,000 rupees, maybe more actually. Maybe it was even 60, 70,000 like that. Anyhow, Prabhupada said, yes, let him come, give him a room. And so he came, you know, so old man. And he used to sit down by Radharasa Bihari and give Charanamrita. So he passed his last years like that, giving Charanamrita. That's all he could do, you know, just. And you see in Mayapur and Vrindavan, there are some very elderly devotees like that. Some of them just do kirtan in the temple. Some of them just give Charanamrita. So, you know, they can't put out the same energy as a young person, but, you know, they're remembering Krishna, they're serving Krishna to the best of their capacity. And in this way, they're preparing themselves for leaving this world. Yeah, that's very important, that the older senior people should concentrate on the quality, because, you know, that they'll refine their devotion in that way, and they'll be able to give guidance to the younger devotees in a sober way, experienced way. Younger people, you know, it's essential that they keep themselves, you know, very busy in Krishna's service, and because they have a lot of energy and senses are very strong, and, you know, if they don't keep themselves very busy, they easily get, you know, led away by the senses. But, you know, older person, as a person gets older, you know, his senses will get, you know, more sort of fatigued in the sense of, you know, searching for sense gratification, or thinking that sense gratification is going to bring some kind of happiness. So, you know, therefore, he may not need to, you know, act in such a energetic fashion, but can give a little more attention to refining his devotional practices, hearing, chanting, and as you say, just doing a nice quality of service. So that's natural with age. There's a certain, you know, maturing which takes place. And ultimately, even in the very last stages of life, a person, he may just absorb himself fully, practically, in hearing and chanting about Krishna. He may not do necessarily so much physical work. I mean, even Srila Prabhupada, you know, he was mainly just instructing, speaking about Krishna. He didn't rush around all over the place. He was, like what they say, lazy and intelligent, or relaxed, intelligent. That's first class person, Prabhupada said, lazy, intelligent. And then next is active, intelligent, you know, very, very busy, but, you know, not so sort of detached and sober. And then next is lazy, active, foolish. He's not very intelligent, but at least he's active, he's doing. And the worst is lazy, foolish. He's foolish, he doesn't do anything either. So the, you know, the old elders in the society, they'll, you know, naturally refine their Krishna consciousness and by give good intelligence to the younger people who have got, you know, more energy to actually do. The younger people can execute the activities under the guidance of the more experienced persons. Or in terms of varnas also, the brahmanas are of a more intelligent nature, and whereas vaishyas, kshatriyas, vaishyas, sudras, they have more, you know, more energy, more influence of a passionate nature. So like that, they also have to act under the, you know, more sober mode of goodness, guidance of the brahmanical persons. Now that way the you know, link with Krishna can be stronger in the whole society. That's why the brahmanas had to be protected. They weren't supposed to rush around in a passionate way so much as to be peaceful so they could study the Shastra, imbibe the instructions of the Supreme Lord, and have a clear vision, you know, so that they could, you know, point out where the mistakes are and guide people how to be productive in service to Krishna. Just like you can see in this particular story here, how, you know, that Brahmana, he had a very clear vision. He was able to speak very powerfully, you know, about, you know, what should be done, what should not be done. So this is this kind of maturity and soberness is needed among older devotees and Brahminical devotees. It's very important. Otherwise, you know, we'll be doing so many things in a, you know, flurry of passionate activity without any real, you know, direction or goal, and we may not accomplish so much. But if there's, you know, good sober guidance and leadership, then the devotees can become more genuinely productive. Mm-hmm.
I was just wondering about the three principles of Vrindavan.
The main thing, you worship your own deities. After all, it wouldn't be very polite to be. Yes, of course, if you visited there, then you should pray to those deities, naturally. I mean, wherever you go, you pray to those particular deities. You try to, you know, offer some service to those deities. Any other point? All right, so thank you. We'll continue tomorrow. Hare Krishna.